The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Wednesday. I am Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. And it's a busy, busy day. A lot happened yesterday and a lot happened this morning, too. So we're going to jump right in with Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net, who spent the morning live tweeting the Gina Haspel hearings, her confirmation hearing to be the next CIA director. Marcy, you there?
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I know it was a busy morning for you. What was your takeaway of Gina Haspel? Are impressed much?
You know, I expected to not like her, but expected her to come off as competent, mm-hmm. sort of in the way John Brennan always did in hearings. And she didn't even do that. I thought she came off, she couldn't keep her lies together. So I thought it was terrible.
You at EmptyWheel.net, you have a post up already on this morning's hearings, and you have a long list of questions that she just didn't answer. What I was taken with, every time she was asked a question, it would be Senator, and she would go into a whole long thing that didn't answer the question. But there were a number of questions she didn't answer. What questions did she answer?
Well, she explained a little about the circumstances surrounding the destruction of the torture tapes in 2005. She blamed it mostly on Jose Rodriguez. She said that a claim that she managed the torture program in 2004 was inaccurate. This was a claim made in John Rizzo's book. I think the truth lies somewhere in between what Rizzo said and what she claimed in today's hearing. Other than that, you know, she when she was challenged, she often said, you know, after it was one of those hearings, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11. So she was happy to make allusions to the things that the danger she faced as a CIA officer. And that's all, you know, I don't blame her doing that, nor do I blame Republicans for emphasizing that. But no, she didn't answer the question she needed to answer about torture. Not at all.
Especially when she was asked if torture is moral. She couldn't come up with an answer.
Right. And I think the most telling version of that, several senators asked that, Mark Warner and Kamala Harris. But when Jack Reed asked the question, he said, if a terrorist was waterboarding a CIA officer, would you believe it's immoral? And she still didn't answer yes or no, but she said, well, I think we're different from the terrorists. And she suggested then that when we were torturing, it was moral. And when terrorists use torture, it's immoral. And that pretty much, I think, sums up Gina Haspel is that, I mean, look, a lot of Americans believe that, right? What America does is okay. And what terrorists do is not okay. But this was a particular instance where she refused to say even that if one of her people was tortured, it'd be immoral. Of course she believes that, but she just refused to say that publicly.
She was also, again, one of the questions you said she wouldn't answer is if she would answer is if she would recuse herself from declassification decisions relating to her nomination. She just was so noncommittal, right?
Well, that wasn't even noncommittal. She refused to answer the question. Kamala Harris asked her specifically, don't you think Dan Coats should be in charge of this? And it was very clear she was not going to even envision the possibility that somebody else would carry out those declassification questions. And it's an interesting issue because if Dan Coats did it, former senator, right? Mm-hmm. But also director of national intelligence, technically her boss and would remain her boss as CIA director. But he has different equities. He has not spent a lifetime protecting the agency, and she would not envision her boss, somebody who's senior to her, doing the declassification, making the declassification decisions because, I assume, because he didn't, he hasn't spent a lifetime trying to protect the agency. And that's, I mean, the other really telling thing about that, Nicole, is that, you know, she said, well, we can't declassify X, Y, and Z, we can't declassify X, Y, and Z. But I'm fairly certain several of the things that she mentioned in the hearing, like she raised details about Jennifer Matthews, who is a CIA officer who was killed in Khost in 2009, I believe it was. She talked about assignments that they had been in the same place together. That kind of stuff is classified, and she revealed it in open session. She described how much she paid the agent that the CIA asset, the first CIA asset she met. She said she described paying an extra $500 for his men. So it's clear she's willing to expose classified information in the pursuit of getting confirmed. It's just that she wants to pick and choose the classified information. And one of the most interesting moments was she refused to confirm that she had overseen the torture of Abdelrahim al-Nashiri, he's a detainee in Gitmo right now. And that clearly was about not wanting to testify at his trial. You know, because like, A, she doesn't want to confirm that she was in charge of that torture. But as soon as she confirms that she did torture him, that she was in charge of torturing him, then she becomes susceptible to being called as a witness. And you know, I think that's the game she's playing.
Marcy Wheeler is with us. You find her at emptywheel.net. She's a great national security journalist. You have a book coming out, don't you?
Not anytime soon.
No? Oh, I thought I read somewhere. Maybe it was just that you had a piece in the New York Times and they referenced your book. So maybe that's what
yes,
it was.
I probably will end up writing one about Russia, but that's down the road.
Okay, gotcha. So again, we're talking about this morning's hearing. Now there's an afternoon session with Gina Haspel that's closed session. That's when they're supposed to talk about the classified stuff, right?
Correct. Yes. I assume it'll go all afternoon and then we'll hopefully hear leaks, but maybe not.
Right. So what are your thoughts? You think she'll be confirmed?
Well, John Cornyn has already said she'll be confirmed with comfort with some Democratic support. It sounds like Joe Manchin is going to support her. So that counteracts John McCain's vote, who wouldn't be around. That gets you to 50. And then the question is whether Rand Paul, who has said he'll oppose her, whether he'll support her. And a few other people, the same people who voted for Mike Pompeo, mm-hmm. would probably vote for her, unfortunately.
Wow. Well, that's disappointing. Your thoughts on, you know, here's the question. If we don't, Gina Haspel at least is to play devil's advocate for a second, a CIA veteran. She understands the way the agency works. She's worked in it for over 30 years. She's not a political being as such, and if it's not her, we could wind up with what Tom Cotton, someone who is fully political. Is there a better scenario?
Yeah, there is. Over the weekend, when it sounded like Haspel might withdraw her nomination, mm-hmm. There was a report about what Plan B is, and Plan B would be to name a woman named Sue Gordon, who's the principal deputy director of National Intelligence. So same seniority level as Haspel, but everything I've heard about her says she's wonderful, very qualified, well-loved. It would be well welcome, you know, so she would be a great replacement for Haspel. And all of the things that people said, you know, people like Saxby Chambliss, who doesn't care anything about equality of women, you know, the notion of the importance of having a woman appointed, would be true for Sue Gordon as well. So that would actually be a better scenario. But if if Haspel has the votes, then I suppose she'll be confirmed.
Right. I want to play a clip. This was from the beginning of, you know, her prepared statement when she said she won't restart the torture program, and ask you a question about it. And it's about a 30-second clip.
In light of my counterterrorism experience, I understand that what many people want to know about are my views on CIA's former detention and interrogation program. I have views on this issue, and I want to be clear. Having served in that tumultuous time, I can offer you my personal commitment, clearly and without reservation, that under my leadership, on my watch, CIA will not restart a detention and interrogation program.
Now, Marcy Wheeler, she was asked, what if Donald Trump ordered her to torture? Did she answer that question?
Well, she said that she basically said she's not going to let the agency be in charge of interrogation anymore. One question I would have liked her to be asked is whether she would render a detainee to another country to be tortured, as the government was about to do or wants to do with a Saudi American citizen who was picked up with ISIS. The answer is clearly yes, because CIA always does that. And it would make it clear that she actually has no problems with torture. It's just that she doesn't want the agency to be damaged by being involved in torture anymore. I think one of the questions that really disturbs me that she didn't answer, two of them actually, was that she was asked if she had ever been alone in a room with Trump, and right. She refused to answer. And then she was asked if she would tell Congress if he asked her for a loyalty oath. She refused to answer. And between those two, it leads me to believe that she is willing to do whatever she needs to do to stay in Trump's good side. So the question is not whether she would stand up to him on restarting torture. The question is, what other horrible things is Trump going to ask her to do that she's willing to do? She's already proven a willingness to do what people order her to do.
Right.
So long as she can ensure that the agency isn't embarrassed. And one of her answers about the tape destruction, which is really interesting, is, you know, she makes it clear she just thinks the tapes should have been destroyed right away. Right. So when she's asked, was it appropriate to blow off CIA Director Porter Goss in 2005 to destroy the tapes, she's basically like, well, they should have been destroyed right away. So she doesn't care that her boss was insubordinate to make that happen, because in her mind, the important thing is to make sure that the evidence gets destroyed.
Wow. Scary stuff. And this is, I guess, what we're in for, because it's looking like she probably will be confirmed.
Yes, I think so.
Boy. I will post a link to your piece, Gina Haspel's Fluid Moral Compass. It's up at emptywheel.net. I'll post that on my blog along with the podcast of today's show. Marcy Wheeler, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Great to be on. Thanks, Nicole.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm,
bye-bye.
So there you go. It was, I only saw part of the hearing today. People who've been listening for a long time know I suffer from restless leg syndrome, and it's been really, acting up in the last few days. So I've not been sleeping well at night. So I was lying in bed and, trying to sleep, but listening to the hearing, and getting, you know, it's hard to sleep when you're listening to questions about torture and stuff like that. There you go. We are just going down the tubes. There is a lot going on. Dave Johnson's going to join us in the second half hour of the show to talk about other things in the news. But to get us started on the way to the news, let's do what's news. We'll do it live.
I read the news today. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
North Korea released three American prisoners in an apparent goodwill gesture ahead of a planned summit between Trump and Kim. In a tweet this morning, Donald Trump said, "I am pleased to inform you that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in the air and on his way back from North Korea with the three wonderful gentlemen that everyone is looking so forward to meeting. They seem to be in good health." He's just so weird. They're scheduled to arrive at 2 a.m. in the morning, That's redundant. Trump will be there to greet them. Iranian politicians have reacted to Trump's withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal by burning paper American flags and questioning the president's mental capacity. CNN's Jim Acosta has more.
The U.S., it's a deal, no more. As President Trump abruptly pulled the U.S. out of the agreement designed by the Obama administration to prevent Tehran from developing nuclear weapons.
The Iran deal is defective at its core. Therefore, I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal.
The president didn't hide why he's scrapping the Iran deal.
The United States no longer makes empty threats. When I make promises, I keep them.
Mr. Trump is delivering on one of his first campaign promises to abandon a deal he repeatedly savaged at his rallies.
It could go down as one of the worst deals in history.
The president accused Iran of lying about its participation in the agreement, despite the fact that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo testified at his confirmation hearing that he had no proof that Tehran was not in compliance with the deal.
With the information that I've been provided, I've seen no evidence that they are not in compliance today.
The Iran deal is the latest Obama policy dumped by the president, joining the Paris Climate Agreement, the Trans-Pacific Trade Deal, the DACA program protecting the Dreamers, and the Obamacare individual mandate. Obama's former Secretary of State, John Kerry, who helped broker the Iran agreement, tried in vain to save the deal.
Our friends are safer if we stay in this agreement. We made an agreement. Iran is living by the agreement. Yes, we have concerns on the missiles, on Yemen, other things, but we should be working on those.
The president instead sided with Iran deal critics like Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and against leaders from important U.S. allies like France, Germany, and Britain, who pleaded with Mr. Trump to stay in the deal.
We think that what you can do is be tougher on Iran, address the concerns of the president, and not throw the baby out with the bathwater, not junk a deal. Because, as I say, Plan B does not seem to me to be particularly well developed at this stage.
As the president is pulling back from the Iran deal, he's moving toward his own nuclear agreement with North Korea, announcing Pompeo will meet with regime leaders to continue working on an upcoming summit.
We have our meeting set. The location is picked, the time and date, everything is picked, and we look forward to having a very great success.
But Democrats worry the president is sending the wrong message to the North Koreans by signaling to the world that U.S. commitments are only good for one administration at a time.
You're making it harder to go after Hezbollah. You're making it harder to go after Iranian activities that are really dangerous. And you're probably making it harder to come to a North Korea deal.
Following Trump's announcement yesterday, Israel readied bomb shelters in the Golan Heights, wary of reprisals from Tehran, while Wall Street braced for a lower opening. Fox News' Shepard Smith noted that Trump was not pulling out of the deal, but was violating it.
So what we have done is we've ignored the views of almost all of our allies except Israel, and gotten out of the Iran deal. So that shows Kim Jong-un.
You can't really get out of the Iran deal, though. There's no provision from that. You can make a decision to now violate the terms of the deal, which you were a party to,
right.
But pulling out is a bit of a misnomer.
Yes, it is. What's that man doing on Fox? I guess it's a good thing that he's there. It keeps him in a bit of a check. The company set up by Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, to pay hush money to porn star Stormy Daniels reportedly received payments totaling around $500,000 from a business linked to Russian oligarch Viktor Vekselberg after the 2016 election, according to files released by Daniels' attorney, Michael Avenetti.
Donald Trump's personal lawyer, currently embattled in the FBI probe, Michael Cohen, stands, and this is breaking, accused of taking $500,000 from a sanctioned Russian oligarch during Donald Trump's presidency. You did hear that right, and we will explain. This allegation comes from Michael Cohen's opponent, Michael Avenatti, who represents Stormy Daniels. And breaking right now, he has released information, 7 pages, which I'm going to walk through, and this tweet, where he talks about the allegation that Michael Cohen received $500,000 in the months after the 2016 election from a company controlled by a Russian oligarch who has been sanctioned by the United States and is linked to Putin. The very oligarch mentioned here in this new material, a man named Viktor Vekselberg, was not only sanctioned by the U.S. Treasury in April under the Trump administration, but he was also contacted by Mueller's investigators who reportedly questioned him 2 months ago, according to the New York Times. They snagged him. as he flew into a New York area airport. Now, Vexelberg has not been identified as a suspect in connection with the Mueller probe.
Now, if you haven't read Michael Avenatti's executive summary, it's quite fascinating. I'll post a link to it on the blog today as well. Avenatti, you might be wondering how he got this information. We all are, actually. He stands behind his story.
Now, look, I've made some bold predictions over the course of this case. I think a number of those have come true. I pride myself on under-promising and over-delivering, and I think we've proven ourselves in that regard. We stand behind everything that we put in that executive summary 100%. We understood the magnitude of the accusations and what was being put in that document when we compiled it. It was double and triple checked, and now we're having independent news organizations vouch the accuracy of what we've stated. And it's all there. It's all 100% accurate. And by the way, to the extent that Mr. Trump or Michael Cohen has information that contradicts what we've put in our executive summary, let them come forward, let them release it. In fact, I'll place a challenge right now. Michael Cohen, if you're watching this, authorize your attorneys to release the bank statements, the source documentation from this account to the American people, to the media, so that people can get to the bottom of this. And to the extent that we haven't been accurate about something, then they can prove it up.
He's a confident guy. Got to give him credit. Avenatti's report also said that Cohen's company, Essential Consulting, received payments from AT&T, Novartis, and Korea Aerospace Industries Limited in 2017 and 2018. In a statement to Huffington Post, AT&T confirmed that it made four payments totaling roughly $200,000 to Essential. Further reports... Oh, I don't have it here. Novartis paying $1.2 million for basically one meeting with Cohen, after which they realized he couldn't deliver the access he promised. We'll get into this with Dave Johnson in a little bit. Yesterday was primary day in West Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, and North Carolina, in one of the most closely watched races. Ex-convict Cole Barron and Republican candidate Don Blankenship lost the West Virginia Senate primary race to Patrick Morrisey, who will now face incumbent Senator Joe Manchin. Blankenship blamed his loss on the president.
My advisors tell me that it's time to concede, so we're conceding the election. My understanding is it's Patrick Morrisey, Attorney General. Again, the only thing I can tell you is I did what I could do to try to help the state get out of the 50th position economically and sure. Out of the first position in terms of drug overdose deaths. I'm being asked, of course, whether some of the things we did, whether it's cocaine Mitch or whether it's some of the other criticisms of Mitch McConnell or whether it's China people made the difference.
China people.
I really don't think so. I think if there was any single factor based on the polling at different times, the debate and all the things I saw, it was probably more likely President Trump's, lack of endorsement. I don't know what to call it, but don't vote for Don tweet.
Yeah, I think it was his electric personality. Yeah, that charisma he's got going on there. Gina Haspel, as we discussed with Marcy Wheeler at the top of the show, went before the Senate Intelligence Committee this morning in her confirmation hearing to be the next CIA director. NBC's Hallie Jackson has some background.
A former spy stepping out of the shadows and into the spotlight, with Gina Haspel picked to lead the CIA, working to win over lawmakers.
Hello, everybody.
Her hearing today, high stakes and high pressure. A career intelligence officer who's run CIA stations around the globe, Haspel would be the first woman to lead the agency, controversial for her role overseeing brutal CIA interrogations after 9/11. U.S. intelligence officials tell NBC News Haspel once ran a secret CIA prison, a black site in Thailand, where a detainee was waterboarded and later helped facilitate getting rid of videotapes showing those harsh interrogation practices, which a Senate report later defined as torture. An investigation by the CIA into the destruction of those tapes cleared Haspel of any wrongdoing. Haspel tackling that topic head on. In her prepared testimony, she says, having served in that tumultuous time, I can offer you my personal commitment clearly and without reservation that under my leadership, CIA will not restart such a detention and interrogation program.
Again, NBC's Hallie Jackson. As we discussed some of the hearing with Marcy Wheeler, but I wanted to play for you the back and forth, and it runs about 5 minutes, but it's worth it because Kamala Harris did such a great job questioning her that I wanted to share her questioning with you.
Thank you. So, let's just be clear. This hearing is not about the incredible importance of the service and sacrifice of the men and women of the CIA. That's not what this hearing is about. This hearing is not about the importance of the agency's mission.
Nope.
Both of which I wholeheartedly support. This hearing is about your suitability to be the director of the CIA, and in our responsibility to participate in choosing who will be the next director of the CIA, the mission that we have now includes understanding that who we choose will be a signal to the men and women of the agency, to the American people, and to our neighbors around the world mm-hmm. about our values as Americans on critical issues that range from our adherence to a rule of law to what we prioritize in terms of professional accountability and what we prioritize in terms of our moral authority as Americans and as a country. So one question I've not heard you answer is, do you believe that the previous interrogation techniques were immoral?
Answer
the question.
Senator,
I believe that CIA officers to whom you referred...
It's a yes or no answer. Do you believe the previous interrogation techniques were immoral? I'm not asking, do you believe they were legal? I'm asking, do you believe they were immoral?
Hmm.
Senator, I believe that CIA did extraordinary work to prevent another attack on this country, given the legal tools that we were authorized to use.
Please answer yes or no. Do you believe in hindsight that those techniques were immoral?
Senator, what I believe sitting here today is that I support the higher moral standard we have decided to hold ourselves to.
Can you please answer the question?
Amazing.
Senator, I think I've answered the question.
No, you've not. Do you believe the previous techniques, now armed with hindsight, do you believe they were immoral? Yes or no?
Senator, I believe that we should hold ourselves to the moral standard outlined in the Army Field Manual.
Okay, so I understand that you've not answered the question, but I'm going to move on. So I understand that you, from previous answers, are serving as the authority over whether or not CIA information concerning you will be classified or not. Given an obvious appearance of conflict, will you agree to recuse yourself from the responsibility and the authority to make decisions about whether or not that information will be classified or not? Will you agree to recuse yourself of that responsibility and authority? Yes or no?
Senator, I am following the guidelines that exist at CIA, and there is another declassification authority. It's called the IRO. I have not interfered with it.
Do you believe that you have the authority to recuse yourself?
I'll take that for the record. I may have the authority to recuse myself.
Assuming
I'm not a lawyer.
Do.
I'm not sure about that.
Assuming you do, and I believe you do, will you agree to recuse yourself from the responsibility and the authority of making decisions about what CIA information about you and your record will be classified or declassified?
Senator, if I had agreed with the proposals that have come up to because people thought it would be advantageous to me, I think I would have been abdicating my responsibility to follow the rules that everyone at CIA follows.
Okay, and you also in this hearing have a responsibility to answer the questions that are being asked of you. I'm going to ask you a different question. Would you agree that given this appearance of conflict or potential conflict around the classification or declassification of these documents, that would you agree that Director Coates instead should have the responsibility for declassification decisions regarding your background?
Senator, I think one important thing is that this committee plays a unique role.
She just doesn't answer the question.
And we have sent over every piece of paper we can lay our hands on about my classified record. all of my evaluations over a 33-year career. And I hope every senator has had the opportunity to look at that classified material.
Indeed, I have.
But there are...
I have another question for you then, because I only have a few minutes left. I only have a few seconds left. The president has asserted that torture works. Do you agree with that statement?
Ooh. Senator, I don't believe that torture works. I believe that in the CIA's program, and I'm not attributing this to enhanced interrogation techniques, I believe, as many people, directors who have sat in this chair before me, that valuable information was obtained from senior al-Qaeda operatives that allowed us to defend this country and prevent another attack.
Is that a yes?
No, it's not a yes. We got valuable information from debriefing of al-Qaeda detainees, and I don't think it's knowable whether interrogation techniques played a role in that.
Gina Haspel this morning being questioned by Kamala Harris shows you why I like Kamala Harris and really don't like Gina Haspel. From Empty Wheels, Marcy Wheeler's blog, she wrote, I expected to dislike Gina Haspel, but be impressed with her competence. The same view I always had about John Brennan. But she did not come off as competent in her confirmation hearing, in large part because the lies surrounding her career cannot be sustained. Just in that one short 5-minute question and answer session, you can hear why she's not likable. As Truman Towns said in the chat room, no, she is a war criminal. And she's likely the next CIA director. Lucky us. All right. After a very quick break, we'll come back with Dave Johnson to talk about the news of the day. And there's a lot out there. Stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
What do taxpayer giveaways to big corporations really cost us? I'll tell you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Governors and mayors insist that giving our tax dollars to corporations to lure them to move to our cities is good public policy. Because the corporations create jobs, those workers pay taxes, and voila, the corporate giveaway pays for itself. Really? No. Good Jobs First tracked the 386 incentive deals since 1976 that gave at least $50 million to a corporation. Then it tallied the number of jobs created. The average cost per job was $658,000 each. That's far more than cities and states can recover through sales, property, income, and all other taxes those job holders would pay in their lifetimes. The rosy job creation claims by dealmakers also tend to be bogus, for they don't subtract the number of jobs lost as a result of these deals. Amazon, for example, has leaned on officials in every major metro area to subsidize its creation of a nationwide network of warehouses, data centers, and other facilities. In a 2016 report titled Amazon's Stranglehold, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance found that more than half of Amazon's facilities had been built with government subsidies. And Good Jobs First found that since 2005, Amazon has received more than $1 billion from taxpayers to build their private business. Each handout was made in the name of local workers. And yes, Amazon does employ thousands. But the subsidies enable the retail giant to undercut local unsubsidized competitors, driving them out of business and causing devastating job losses that greatly outnumber jobs gained. Indeed, while Amazon employs 146,000 people, it has eliminated some 295,000 jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, check it out at ilsr.org/Amazon-stranglehold.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Olson Johnson is right. I say we stay and fight it out.
Dr. Samuel Johnson's right about Olson Johnson's being right. And I'm not giving up my ice cream parlor that I built with these two hands for nothing or nobody.
Howard Johnson is right.
The latest in a long line of Johnsons who were right. Correct. It's Dave Johnson on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Dave Johnson is a former senior fellow at the Center for the Campaign for America's Future. He blogs at seeingtheforest.com, and he's a friend of the show and a good person to shoot the shit with about the news. Hello, Dave Johnson.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Thanks for coming on. How are you holding up these days?
Well, I read the news. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I know.
What does that leave us?
Yeah, that's,
sorry.
That's about right.
That question.
Yeah.
Yeah. How am I holding up? How is everybody holding up?
Oh, my God. Yeah. By the skin of our teeth. Isn't that
not
how the expression goes?
Yeah.
I know you didn't.
Okay, so go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I know you didn't watch the Gina Haspel hearings this morning, but. You know, I watched some of it. I was trying to sleep a little bit, but Marcy Wheeler was on the show at the top of the program, and now I'm even more depressed about it than I was after watching the bit that I watched.
Did you see The Onion on Twitter?
No.
The Onion, they tweeted out then with a picture. she rubs her lucky prisoner's foot. Well,
oh,
she
God.
Testifies. She's holding this amputated foot. Yeah. So you had Hightower on talking about Amazon.
Yes.
And the kinds of favors they get from the government.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, he was understating it. And Amazon's just one of so many. But think about this. I'm going to do some math. I got a math problem for you, okay?
Okay.
Now, if you're like you and me and you only make $1 million a month, okay, yeah, if you only make $1 million a month, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then it'll take you 1,000 years to make as much as Jeff Bezos made in a day 2 weeks ago.
Oh, my God.
He made $12 million in one day from this Amazon stock going up, and $12 million is 12,000 million. I mean, $1 billion. $12 billion. Yeah. And I have a math degree. $12 billion is 1,000 times 12 million.
He made 12 billion, not 12 million.
12 billion in a day. So
billion with
if
a B.
You make 1,000
oh
a month or 12 million a day, 1,000 years, you'll make what he made in one day.
Okay, you
so
got that.
We're so unfortunate as to only make $1 million a month. It would take us 1,000 years to make $12 billion, which he made in a day.
$1 billion in one day. Oh my God!
From stock. So, when people hear that there's wealth inequality, it's almost impossible to comprehend what's being talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you look at the amounts. Okay, now I'm going to bridge this into the Cohen thing. Cohen. How do you say his last name?
Cohen.
A lot of people say Cohen.
Cohen.
Michael Cohen, the supposedly Trump lawyer,
mm-hmm.
okay, the mob lawyer guy, you know.
The fixer.
The fixer, right, yeah. So he's getting these huge, I think they said, just from that one report yesterday, about $5 million going into this anonymous shell corporation that
mm-hmm.
turns out is him.
Right.
You know, there's nobody in the company, it's just him. $5 million, all right? And he's not even in the White House. Imagine how much is going to the people in the White House, into their anonymous shell corporations. Trump has more than 1,000 anonymous shell corporations
wow.
of his own.
Wow. Wow.
1,000. Yeah, that's how he does his business. So you're starting to get this picture. So this tax deal that we just had, okay, they call it tax reform, which of course means watch your wallet. So much money. The Koch brothers got $1 billion a year minimum out of that, all right? Apple got so much money that they are doing a $300 billion stock buyback, which
wow.
means that used to be illegal. It means that Apple itself is using its cash to buy company stock. there's less stock, so the price goes way up, and that enriches Apple executives and the billionaires who hold Apple stock, which most stock is owned by, you know, the top 10% at best.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into the Bezoses and stuff, which is the 1% of the 1% of the 1% types. So you start to get an idea of how things have changed and the way things work in our country, where if you can affect legislation, okay, think about this, the incredible fights they had, by, like, let's say, between the Obama people and the Hillary people.
Mm-hmm.
What was that about? Within hours of Trump getting elected, this guy Michael Cohen is getting millions and millions of dollars for consulting, they call it, okay? AT&T,
right. Right.
Novartis, millions of dollars into his anonymous LLC for consulting, okay?
Yep.
Imagine what the people inside the White House are getting. But that is what the fight between the Hillary camp and the Obama camp, okay, are about. That's what those fights are really about inside Washington and the viciousness of it. Because if your person is the person that gets in, then you are connected to that. And then after you get out of government, that's when the real millions flow, okay? If you're in a position in government where you can affect a decision, a regulation, whether to prosecute somebody, whether to tax somebody, and then when you leave, you collect your payoff. You get rich. Literally, you can cash in, and it's legal. Speaking fees, for example, you know, corporations
right.
just handing you $500,000, all these kind of things. So that's what's going on. Trump and his people are cashing in on it like no one's ever seen. But he identified, he said, look, this is what's going on in Washington, vote for me. What he didn't say was, this is what's going on in Washington, vote for me, so I can cash in on it.
Right. I was going to say
there's
that...
There's my opening monologue.
Gotcha. I was going to say that, you know, those staffers need the money because they need to pay their legal fees. I wish I had a rim shot in handy. Novartis said they paid $1.2 million to Michael Cohen, had one meeting with him, and determined he would be, quote, unable to provide the services that Novartis had anticipated related to U.S. healthcare policy matters. Now Novartis, according to NBC News, is saying Michael Cohen was promising access to Trump. This guy's up to his ears in trouble.
What about Novartis?
What about them? They'll probably get off scot-free.
$1.2 million. They got so much money.
Yep.
They could just give the guy $1.2 million because he's promising what? It's a bribe.
Yep.
He's saying, you know, $1.2 million will buy you health care policy, and he did. You know, and it's so widespread, so rampant. Think about this: the report we saw didn't show $1.2 million. I think the report we saw showed $400,000, $200,000, something like that, coming from Novartis. What LLCs that Cohen has did the rest of that money get put into?
I don't know.
We only know about one LLC from one guy now. Yet Trump has 1,000 LLCs, for example, himself. And we know openly that that governments and others and companies are putting on big things at Trump resorts, Trump hotels and stuff, because, you know, and they're putting in millions into it. Just for example, putting money, cash in Trump's pocket. That's the game here. That's what we're looking at, okay? Just so people understand, we have got to make this crap illegal. We have got to vote them out. We have got to vote in people like Zephyr Teach out in New York,
yes,
who promised to make this shit illegal. Bernie Sanders, make this, all of it, illegal. If you're in government, you should be serving the public. You shouldn't be able to make a bunch of money when you leave government, because that will affect the decision-making while you're in government. And if people see you, let's say you leave office, and then you start getting, let's say, speaking fees from corporations, big money, like Wall Street speaking fees. Now, I don't know anybody who would do that, but suppose somebody did get Wall Street speaking fees.
Right.
Then if you're in government now, and you see that kind of money flowing, and now you're faced with a decision, are you going to crack down on executives, let's say, at a big Wall Street firm who's caught for, let's say, a foreclosure scandal or subprime mortgage loans scamming on people. Mm-hmm. Maybe you might decide to, for example, give them a fine and not prosecute anybody in the company. And if you don't get what I'm getting at, that's how the Obama administration worked. Nobody was prosecuted.
Right.
Not one banker was prosecuted after the crash. Okay, that's my second monologue.
Well, but that's a really important point. I can tell you're pissed off, and rightly so. The Obama administration really dropped the ball on this stuff, and that's, well, I was going to say that's why it's still happening. The reason it's still happening is Trump is in the White House, but also because Obama did nothing to stop it.
Right. Oh, and when there was enough noise about this stuff, and why aren't anybody in the Obama administration, why aren't they doing anything about these bankers and the stuff they're doing and the stuff they did? They brought in a guy to supposedly run a commission and an investigation of this stuff. You know who they brought in?
No.
Eric Schneiderman.
Oh, God.
And then everybody was wondering why he didn't do anything, and he didn't. Eric Schneiderman, for listeners who aren't able to keep up with the fire hose of news, resigned from the Attorney General of the state of New York yesterday?
Yesterday, before? Yeah. It was the night before last.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because of the allegations that he was abusive to women in relationships, not just abusive, but horribly abusive. We talked about it a bit yesterday. The New Yorker story is just stunning in its sickness. And the sad thing is, Eric Schneiderman seemed to be the firewall against Trump because he was in New York State, where.
Yeah.
Now the good news is, I guess. Do you know what happens in New York now? Who, Dave Johnson? Who gets to? Does Andrew Cuomo get to pick Eric Schneiderman's replacement? Or how does
I think
it work?
His. You there?
No, I'm here.
Huh, I wonder what just happened. I got a big. Anyway, his number two steps in. I understand that they have said it will not affect Trump in any way whatsoever, the going after Trump. And guess who's running or talking about running for
Attorney
General?
Zephyr Teachout.
Yeah.
And it would be
Zephyr Teachout
awesome.
Is an anti-corruption, a professor who's written a book on corruption and campaigns against corruption. She's literally written the book on corruption. Mm-hmm. And ethics in government.
So oh, she'd be great. Awesome. And she tweeted something out yesterday that she's considering running for New York Attorney General. And I'm one of the people who retweeted her with a please run message attached.
Yep.
So
that noise I just had, by the way, was a scam. Are you getting these telemarketing calls lately?
Oh, I get tons of them.
I'm getting 7, 8, 9 a day on my cell phone and as many on my house phone, and that was one of them.
The nice thing about, and I don't know if it's all companies do it, but my cell phone sometimes will have, you know, in caller ID, it'll say scam likely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
That's, yeah, at least you get that.
Yeah.
So that's one more thing. I don't enforce the new do not call list.
No.
Okay, but. I'm starting to sound like the old man at the end of the bar.
That's okay.
Maybe I should run for president, but I'm not racist enough.
No, I guess not. Dave Johnson is with us. So, Dave, so we talked about the Cohen money. You didn't watch the hearings this morning. I don't blame you. North Korea, what are your thoughts on Donald Trump? No bell.
Yeah. I hope they're not playing him. This is exactly what happened with another North Korean, South Korean initiative several years ago. First of all, North Korea, Bill Clinton had put together something called the Agreed Framework, and you can Google Agreed Framework to find out what it was. And it stopped the development of a nuclear program in North Korea. We were going to then help build them a nuclear reactor for energy and a number of other things, and drop sanctions. We did, and a bunch of things, and North Korea was opening up to South Korea, and there was a whole framework for solving this.
Mm-hmm.
In 2000, I think it was 2004, it was 2002, the incoming Bush administration, and I'm not sure if Bolton was involved in this or not, but the incoming Bush administration said exactly the same stuff they're saying about Iran. Killed that deal, killed the agreed framework with North Korea, and got hostile with North Korea, you know, and all of this. And the result was that North Korea went back to a nuclear program, and here we are. It didn't take them long. They were doing tests of what you would call atomic bombs or fission bombs, and now they've got the hydrogen bomb, fusion bomb. The stopping of testing is because those fusion bombs are so powerful that apparently it collapsed the mountain which they were testing
right.
them under. So,
yeah.
So it's, I just hope this is for real, okay? If it's for real, it's great. There's a lot of reasons for North Korea to want peace. You know,
yeah,
to,
like they're broke.
And everything. But right. they are afraid that if they don't have nuclear weapons, then what happened in Iraq and what happened in Libya will happen to them. And now Trump just told them, sure,
you can't trust
let's make
us.
A deal and watch how long we honor
right.
our deals.
Right. He's saying you can't trust us.
So the Iran deal that he announced yesterday could very well kill North Korea's, any North Korean incentive to continue along the path to peace with us. We'll see.
We'll see. As mm-hmm. Donald Trump says, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
So yeah. the Iran thing that he did, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, who you know the answer of what it's going to be, but who is the prime beneficiary other than Israel's short-term
right.
policies of our killing the Iran agreement the way we did it?
Russia, but explain why.
Okay, first of all, it further breaks apart the alliance of Europe and the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, it dramatically increases chaos in the Middle East, which is of great advantage to Russia for several reasons, not the least of which is as refugees pour north out of the Middle East into Europe, it destabilizes Europe and they start voting for people who Russia is encouraging, these white nationalist dictatorships allied with Putin. And thirdly, and the big one, oil prices skyrocketing.
Uh-huh.
Oil prices skyrocketing is actually really good for what's known as a petro state, which is Russia. So
right.
there we go.
Well,
what a coincidence.
Yes. And again, you know, you got to wonder what the scene was at the White House last night when Trump thinks, you know, he's going to turn on the news and see everything all about the Iran deal. And it's all about Michael Cohen and
right.
and this money. It's just, you know, this morning as I'm putting together the show, I'm thinking, wait, that was not yesterday. That was before. And I realized, no, that was yesterday. It was just yesterday he pulled out of Iran. It was just yesterday
yeah.
that, I mean, that all this stuff happened. It's mind-blowing how much shit keeps coming and how quickly it's coming at us.
So much. And that's intentional. That's by design. You know, the chaos, the inability to follow things. There are so many really important things that are dropping off the map, and it also enables them to do a lot of things behind the scenes, you know, the stuff they're doing to environmental regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the cash they're handing corporations like Apple's huge windfall from this tax bill, literally that is falling off the radar. All of these things would be huge scandals, month-long investigations, et cetera, et cetera, at any other time. We get hit with them 2-3 times a day right now.
Right. So,
and that's to keep us all off balance.
Right. And also, so important stories don't get covered.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think it was today, Trump tweeted, the fake news is working overtime. Just reported that despite the tremendous success we're having with the economy and all things else, 91% of the network news about me is negative. And then in parentheses, he writes fake. Then he says,
yeah.
Why do we work so hard in working with media when it's corrupt? Take away credentials. So he's saying any news coverage of him that is critical is fake, which in and of itself is completely wrong. But then he compounds it by saying, take away credentials.
Yeah. Don't let the press cover him. That 91% number comes from an organization called the Media Research Center, which is one of the original organizations funded in the 70s, kind of out of the old John Birch Society crowd,
right.
funded by, at that time, the whole SCAFE, and uh-huh. even then the Koch brothers, et cetera, were putting the money into this effort to go after the media. And essentially, they called it, then it was like playing the ref by claiming media bias, they could get more right-wing favorable coverage. Media Research Center is the organization whose job, who is funded in order to say that the media is biased against the right. And so now they come out with what they're calling a study. And you know what that study said?
What?
The study said the media is biased against the right.
Shocker!
Sorry. So that's where the number came from.
Wow.
But like what they call negative coverage is saying that Trump maybe, if they say Trump paid off a porn star to keep her quiet, that's negative media coverage.
Or this, now I'm just looking at Twitter from The Hill, less than 1 in 3 Americans support Trump's decision to withdraw from Iran deal. Because it's reporting on something critical of him, he's calling that fake. That's not fake.
Right.
What's fake is the shit coming out of Fox and Sinclair and Breitbart and the made-up headlines and Trump.
But with so much happening, how do we just organize in support of, for example, the Iran deal? Get Congress, you know, we don't have the ability to, we're too thrown off our bearings by this fire hose of bad things happening. So the intent is to keep us off balance. And we all recognize that, you know. The question is, can we get enough people in this November? And that requires us, you know, to show up. That's all it requires us to do is show up. And so the coming barrage funded by all this corporate money and billionaire money will be to try to get us to not vote, try to get us set against each other, you know, and it'll be all over the place. And it'll be white progressives are against black people and white progressives are against women. Who knows what? You're going to hear it all. You're going to say, I wouldn't go near voting for that person. Just show up and vote.
Right.
Just show up and vote. Don't let them get away with it. And maybe we can make a difference. I got to throw that in.
We have to. I mean, we've got no choice at this point. And it's looking, I mean, you know, Howie Klein's on every Thursday, and he truly believes the blue wave is coming and it's going to be huge. But again, we can't get complacent. I will never say that. I'll say, you know, it gets scary out there. We just dodged a bullet with Blankenship yesterday. We didn't even talk about the election yesterday. But the fact that he was even a contender is frightening. This is what the Republican Party has come to.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is. He got a lot of votes, too.
Yes, he did. He did come in third.
So much is going to happen between now and then, and it's all going to be about distracting us, pointing us away. They're even going to be closing polling places, or they'll do what they did in Detroit, where, remember, the machines broke down, and we're not going to count these precincts at all. All that kind of stuff's going to happen. You know, there might be a big terrorist attack between now and then. Don't be distracted, and don't let your neighbors be distracted. Make sure you're registered because they're taking people off the polls. You know, it's getting like in Russia, you know, where people show up to supposedly vote and they can't, and the candidates aren't allowed to run. Just hold your nose, close your ears, and vote.
Right. And I hate to say it, with the hold your nose, when it comes the primary time, please vote for the most progressive candidates out there. It's our only chance.
That's right.
But when it comes to general election time, at this point, you got to vote for the Democrat.
That's right. And after the election, stay involved. You got to try to make sure your votes get counted. Just, you know, stand around City Hall and say, wait a minute, maybe we better check the ballots against those reported results. And if it comes down that there's fraud and everything, you got to be ready to just show up in the streets. And that's the only real effective way that they've gotten a lot of these autocrat types out, is when people show up, like Egypt, okay? They just showed up at the square. Thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands eventually showed up at the square and stayed.
Yeah.
And I mean stayed. Every night they were there until the Mubarak was out of office. That works. It worked in the Philippines, worked all over Europe. That's what you have to be ready to do, and you have to let other people know they need to be ready to do that. Show up. It's not just a march. Imagine if those million women that marched right after Trump got there had stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, et cetera.
I don't know if Americans have that in them. I have a feeling we're going to find out over the next few years because I think it's going to get that bad. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope we do have it in us because it may come down to that.
But there is a path. That's a path. You know, I get in this despair. You asked me how I'm doing earlier.
We got 30 seconds, Dave. I
get in this despair, but there is a path. But it involves all of us being aware.
There you go. Dave Johnson. Find him on Twitter at DC Johnson. His blog is at seeingtheforest.com. Dave Johnson, he's usually right.
I'm always right.
You're always right. Thank you, Dave.
Sure.
Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. And tomorrow it's Howie Klein. Talk to you then.